Hi. Thanks. Save that and see if I'm worth it later, okay? Yes, I'm Roger Mike, and I am here from Sun Labs, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about inspiration, open innovation, and this particular project that I like a lot, I like talking about, called Sunspots. Now, Sun Labs is here to create cool stuff, right? We're looking into where things are going, where technology is going. I'm looking for that delta in technology. What direction is it going, and how fast is it going? What's the velocity of it? Where is it all headed? And that's my job. What we do in labs is we take on the risky projects that aren't appropriate for the engineering groups. So we take on things where no is a reasonable answer. If we don't fail on a certain amount of our projects, we're not really taking enough risk. So we are a group that's set up to fail in a strange way. But one of the interesting things that we've started getting interested in is about building community around technology. Because we find that this helps us sort of ferret out the interesting things. And so if you look at the process, engineers design things, and then the manufacturing folks come in and build it, and then there's the sales force that goes out there and sells it, and then there's your customers who actually use it. And we like to think about feeding ideas to these engineers, right? And that's sort of where we're situated. But it's not so simple as that. The way that we do it is we come up with good ideas, and we build them. We're a very hands-on lab. And then we transfer it to engineering. Now, I say that like it's an easy thing. It turns out that if you hire smart people, you can come up with good ideas, and you can even build them. But turning something from a technology into a product, that's where the real challenge comes in. And so what we've done is we've looked at this a little differently, and we've said, you know, maybe what we should be doing is building a community around our technologies. And the community can help us figure out what stuff is cool and what stuff is not. And from that, they can even help us to engage with the rest of the company by growing. And if we really inspire them, we know we're onto something, then the rest of the company will take notice of us, and it kind of backs into becoming something that's useful in a product. They can help figure this out for us. Here's what one of our labs looks like in Sun Labs. We're very serious about our work. And I'm sure a lot of you know about Sun, but just in case you don't, we build chips, we build servers, we build storage, we build operating systems, we build languages, we build applications. We even build an entire data center in a box, this cool thing called the modular data center I'll talk about in a minute. But we basically do lots of stuff that has to do with computers, right? So if we're in labs, anything that has to do with computer science or electrical engineering is kind of fair game. But that means that for us to ask the big questions about where the industry is going and all that, we have to go back to basics, and we have to ask very basic questions like, what is a computer? Wikipedia tells me that it's a machine that manipulates data according to a list of instructions. Fair enough. Okay, I'll buy that. My computer is this cool new MacBook Pro. I really like it a lot. It's a lot of fun. That's what I think of when I think of my computer. Okay? But my life is full of computers that I don't even think about. They're in my car, and my TV, and my camera, and my phone, my thermostat. They're everywhere. You guys know all this stuff, right? Well, Sun plays a part in some of this stuff, because we have this thing called Java that actually came from Sun Labs. And Java is on more devices than there are people on the planet. I always have to stop after I say that, because I just think about it, and it's like, holy crap, more devices than there are people on the planet. That's nuts. And it kind of, from a lab's perspective, it makes it kind of a challenge to figure out, well, what comes next? You know, where do you go from there? But if you look at this, it's kind of interesting, because there's the desktop computers and all that sort of stuff, but 3 billion of these things of these devices are phones. And another 5 billion of them are smart cards. So we're looking at all these little devices as already an area that sun plays a role in. Now, we don't build cell phones. We don't build smart cards. But we do make the technology that goes into them. So if we take that as a model, and Sun Labs is, you know, trying to create the next cool thing here, we're going to play in that space. And you guys have heard all the words about this smart dust, ubiquitous computing, all this stuff. The Internet of Things is what we're talking about. So we've got a project, well, a group of projects that are united around a vision that we call the Internet of Things Actualized, which is trying to bring together the Internet of Things, make it happen sooner rather than later, because we think it's cool. We think there's an opportunity for lots of business here. We think that not only in the little devices, there will be business just in the little devices, there's also business for Sun proper, because a lot of these things are going to be generating data, and that data needs to be stored and processed. It's all good stuff. So we like this. So how do we make this happen? Well, we're studying the entire system from top to bottom. So we believe that Java is a cool thing for this space, because we've already had some pretty good success there. So we've got this Java that we've created in labs called Squawk, that's a Java for small devices. Around that, we've built this thing that I'm going to be talking mostly about today, which is Sunspots. And Sunspots is a platform that includes, in this case, the eSpot device that I'll show you today, and some software to make it all work. And then we've got lots of little areas that we study in there, like secure ad hoc communications, where we're looking at both how to make ad hoc networks work and how to make security work in these types of devices. And then on top of that, we've got all sorts of frameworks and things, like this thing we call Yggdrasil, which is to collect data, and something called sensor.network.com, which is a website to let you look at data and manage it and manipulate it. And so if we look at the sunspot area, and what started us off here was trying to figure out what is going to come next and how can we make sure that sun technology is in it. Like I said, we didn't invent the cell phone, but we sure got a lot of Java platforms in it. So we're going to create an interesting thing called the Sun Small Programmable Object Technology, or Sunspot, and we're going to put it out in the world as a flexible development environment for other people to invent the next cool thing. We're not going to invent it. We're just going to create the technology that makes it easy for other people to invent it, for you guys to invent it. Our approach is to build something to inspire people. Right? We want this to be something that really is flexible, really can be whatever the next great thing is going to be. And we don't know yet what it is, so we have to make it very flexible. We wanted to put together a set of technologies that we thought were interesting for this. So those technologies are that we're interested particularly in the embedded development area. So these are small systems. We want it to be easy to program. That's one of the differentiators we want to provide. So we're using Java as the operating system in these devices. Java runs directly on the metal. Okay, it's the thing that talks to the hardware in this environment. We want to look at devices that are connected, that communicate with each other. So we're looking at things with wireless communications. They can do mesh networking. You can program them over the air, stuff like that. We want them to be mobile. We want them to be able to operate battery-powered. And then we want them to be secure, because a lot of applications are either personal things or things that have to do with businesses where you care about making sure that your data is secure. And then last but not at all least is that we're looking at devices that are aware and active. And what I mean by that is things that can sense what's around them, can act and affect it. If you think about it, this, as cool as my laptop is here, if a meteorite comes out of the sky and strikes me dead, it'll just continue doing what it's doing right now. It has no clue that I'm even here. Talk about, you know, not really with it. I think that there's a big change coming about where devices are going to know more about their surroundings. And so sensing is a big part of that. And changing them physically is also a big part of that. So the Sunspot platform is putting together basically an operating system and tools and everything that you need for devices like this. And we've also created this thing called the Sunspot device. The Sunspot device is this little gadget that is right here. And this little device has basically three layers to it. It's got a battery, it's got the processor board, and an application board that you can swap out, put different ones in to make the Sunspot do different functions. The main board has an ARM9 on it, for those of you who care. It's got an IEEE 802.15.4 radio, which is a low power, relatively short range radio. And it's got USB and other stuff like that. We ship with a particular board that is very flexible and does a lot of stuff, but you can change this board out and have it do different types of things. But this one, the eDemo board, which is sort of a demonstration of the kind of boards you can add on here, includes a three-axis accelerometer, so it can sense motion in all three dimensions. It includes a light sensor, a temperature sensor, these fine blinky LEDs here, because LEDs are just the coolest thing. Everybody wants to blink LEDs, right? They're actually 24-bit LEDs, and so they're complete RGB. Then you've also got six analog inputs, five digital I/O lines, and four digital outs, so you can control other stuff. You can hook them up to servos and make a robot. You can hook them up to other kinds of sensors and notice what's going on around you. And then for software, we have this Java system that we've put together, which is like the Java that's on cell phones, and it's extended in ways where it's designed to go on much smaller devices and run directly on the metal with no operating system underneath it. So it supplies a lot of the services that you would want an operating system for. So what that lets you do is things like, I have this son who, when he was 8 years old, wanted to know, "Daddy, what is this Sunspot thing that you are always talking about and playing around with?" And so we did a little project together. And what we did, and I apologize to the people in the back, but this is your penalty for sitting so far away. You may have trouble seeing this. But we wrote a little application. And this application just notices with the accelerometer when I swing this back and forth, and it blinks the LEDs to make words. And it says, "Hi, this is a sunspot. Okay. See, the people up front applaud because they can see. So that's something that was done with the skills of a manager and the attention span of an 8-year-old. All right. Java really helped us to, you know, be able to get through this. And so what we've done is we've put together this little development kit that we've aimed at, you know, we're in labs. We don't sell stuff. I don't have an income line in my budget that I do every year because we're supposed to be spending money, not making it. So we built these things and we wanted to get them out, and so we sell them to education places at about cost. And essentially it's a kit that includes three of these Sunspots and all the development tools and everything that you need. And we are putting those out in the world so that people can go and invent the next cool thing with them. It's all open source, all of it. And by all of it, I mean the Java virtual machine, the libraries that we put on top of it, the tools that we've created around this stuff, the tools that we use to develop it. In fact, even the hardware that's in it is open source. And in fact, not just the hardware that we ship, but other boards as well. So, for example, I'm just going to mess up the people back there who don't want me to walk down here. But this big board here is the main board. This is the eDemo board that I described. here's a couple of prototyping boards. This is a serial board. This is a memory board that lets you put SD flash cards in to store stuff. This is a high-quality data acquisition module, does high-quality ADDs. We have ones with Bluetooth and GPS. We have one now with a GSM phone on it. So these things can connect to the cellular network and do stuff. And that one was actually developed by Telenor, a large phone carrier in Norway. Very cool. And they've open sourced their design and are selling the boards for people to buy. We've even put out this thing we call eBones, which isn't really a board. It's a wannabe board. It's a starting point for you to design your own boards for the Spot platform. And so it's everything you need from schematics to Gerbers and everything. The reason we did this is because of this. One of the fellows who works, who's in my group, wrote this book called Innovation Happens Elsewhere. And the basic idea is that if you think you're the only smart person around, you aren't so smart. Right? We've got a small team working on this stuff in Sun Labs. We don't have big, huge projects with, you know, 40 or 50 people working on them or something. Most projects in labs are 3 or 4 people. That's kind of our sweet spot. And when you've got these things, you really need to get ideas and get input in from the outside world. And so making things open source and getting it out there where people can play with it and they can invest their time in it really helps you get the feedback on your technology and find out what's working and what isn't, and really pushes it in directions that you never would have. So let's take some examples of what's been done with Sunspots, and let me show you what's going on. And this is the fun part, I think. Sunspots in action. There, that was it. That was fun, wasn't it? Glad you liked it. Perfect. So sunspots have been used in toys. They've been used in a rocket launched up, and we were able to monitor it as it flew. Put it in a balloon that went up to 100,000 feet. The government used it for security with these cool devices that they built. They've been used to make all sorts of weird, wacky robotic devices. We built grids of them that do basic research. They've been used in art projects. This was one in downtown San Jose that took over a hotel. Art projects are cool because artists don't care so much about technology. They want to get some result. They want some effect on their viewer, you know? And so they really challenge you as an engineer to do something interesting and at whatever cost make something work. These fellows at the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena wanted to build these blimps that would wander around and act sort of like a school of fish. And so they had sunspots hanging off the bottom, controlling little motors with little propellers on them, and they had these little noisemakers on them, and they gave them behavior, so they would wander around and they would get hungry and they would fly down and try to find the food stuff that had another sunspot in it, and they're all interacting with each other over the radio. It was pretty cool, and I'm most proud of the fact that they managed to get on the cover of Make Magazine. If you guys, how many of you know about Make Magazine? Excellent! These are my people. If you don't know about Make Magazine, go buy a copy of it. It's really inspiring. It's about taking stuff that you own and making it do what you want it to do, right? Bend, fold, spindle, mutilate, void your warranty, take it apart, and fix it your way. Robotics. There's a company in Utah that builds this platform on the left side of the screen here called the TrackBot. That's basically a complete robot sans brain. And so you plug in your sunspot and it acts as the smarts to control your robot. And it gives you radio communication with other robots so you can build swarms of them and all that sort of stuff. This one on the right side is something that someone in Japan built, a little walking robot that's kind of cute. Up on the top there, there's a robotic contest that's actually here in San Diego where high school students compete with these little Roomba-like devices. It's something called the Create by iRobot and sunspots, and they try to navigate a maze, and it's a lot of fun for them. And they will be at the is it the county fair or something here in San Diego this summer? It's a lot of fun for the kids to go through and do this, and they can do it because it's a Java platform that they, you know, they're learning about. Also, how many of you know about the first robotics competition? Oh, I wish I could see more hands than that. The first robotics competition is another really inspiring thing. It's a high school event that some 40,000 high school students participate in every year, and they build these gigantic robots that are usually bigger than them to do some task that the game committee decides every year under great secrecy. And what they do is truly amazing. I went to the finals in Atlanta this year, and the kids there, what they're doing is fantastic. They are the future technology leaders. And the interesting thing about this project is that they're always looking for mentors. So all of you could get involved and go mentor a team, and I'll tell you, it's the best thing. It's just a blast. Anyway, first, I show this because this coming year, they will be using the Sunspot software platform. It's going to be available on the first robot, so on the Compaq Rio, the device that they use, that they base their robots on, will be running Java. That's this Java that I'm talking about here today. It's a very cool thing. Here's the aforementioned Sun. He built a trebuchet, and he was throwing stuff around the backyard, being a boy, you know. And he said, "Daddy, I wonder how many G's this thing pulls when it's throwing stuff." So we got out a Sunspot and started throwing it around the backyard, and now we know that's about 8.5 G's. Satisfying curiosity, man. That's what it's all about. Sunspots are also used in all sorts of different kinds of applications. Here's one that they're doing in Malawi, Africa, to monitor water quality. My niece actually just this week headed over to Malawi to build schools or something there, but apparently they have problems with water quality there, and they're putting some sensors in the water upstream from the city so that as the water comes down, they can say, "Hey guys, don't drink water for the next couple of days, there's bad stuff in there," or "make sure you boil it," or whatever. They can sort of have these alerts and tell people what's going on by testing it with these various kinds of sensors and things that hopefully they will be using sunspots to do that. Another interesting one is going on in Panama, in the rainforest there, where the scientists, the biologists, are interested in what happens when, I sort of forgot what a lot of it is that they're looking at because of this one fact that they told me that stuck in my brain. There's a bug down there that if it bites you, it's like a bug bite. But 10 years later, your internal organs explode. Now that sucks. And apparently, these biologists know enough about this bug that if they monitor certain environmental characteristics up in the canopy of the forest and down on the ground and places in between, they can tell things that will help them understand where this bug is migrating and where it's headed. And they can actually predict where it's going to go and find out if it's headed towards a populated area or something like that. And I don't know if they know what to do about that yet, but I'm glad they're trying. That's all I can say, because if one comes to my house, the fly swatters raid, I don't know, but I'm after it. So anyway, these guys are doing some really cool stuff down in the rainforest there. Even just around my neck of the woods, the San Francisco Bay area, there's a lot of area in the San Francisco Bay that's been used to manufacture salt. So they let water into these ponds, seawater, and then they close them off and let the water evaporate, and then what's left over is salt, and they have this way of sort of moving it around to these various things, increasing the concentration at these various ponds, and then eventually they get the salt that apparently, up until recently, was salt that would go onto our tables. They don't do that there anymore. And so all these areas in blue on the screen are areas that they're now have sold back to the government, and are restoring to be wetlands. And they're restoring them as wetlands because they're good for the wildlife and everything, but also they happen to be a good buffer zone for tidal changes, which is becoming a more important thing in the Bay Area as we get to global warming and sea levels rise. This can actually help save people's homes by having this sort of buffer area. But it's a tricky thing getting these ecosystems to work. I mean, these biologists are really playing God. By the way, this timer thing, I don't know. It says it's going up and then it's going down and then it's stopping. I don't know exactly what it, so I'm just going to ignore it. Okay. Anyway, these biologists are playing God here. They know stuff about this ecosystem and how all these things work. I mean, there's the guys who know about those bugs in Panama, but these guys are interested in monitoring what's going on with the water that they let back in there, because if the water gets too saline, gets too much salt in it, then it means that the next generation of snowy plovers, this endangered, the next generation of snowy plovers is not going to do well. And the reason they know this is that they've figured out that if the water gets too salty, fish in that water will die. And if the fish in that water dies, then seagulls come in and eat the fish. And if the seagulls come in and eat the fish, eventually they eat all the fish. And then they stick around, and they'll eat whatever else is around, including snowy plover eggs. And so they've got this whole chain of events that says, we need to monitor how much salt is in this water. And they also want to know turbidity and dissolved oxygen and a bunch of other stuff. And so it turns out this is right in my backyard, because that there's a... the blue area that's sort of in the middle there, it's called Ravenswood, and at the very bottom of it, there's a little square gray area that's cut out. That's where my office is. I'm surrounded on three sides by this restoration project. So I figured, you know, we gotta be involved in this, and we've been working with the USGS scientists, and it's really cool. I mean, you guys think you deal with hard problems. These guys, it's cool stuff. Anyway. This was a fun one. The folks at the University of North Carolina, we gave them a sunspot kit and didn't hear from them, so we sent them email, hey, is everything okay? They said, yeah, go to our website and check out this video that we just posted. This helicopter has a sunspot inside it and another one hanging off the bottom. It goes to a predetermined location and it deploys the sunspot. Don't you love that? Now, you can imagine a helicopter going out and deploying a bunch of sunspots, and they self-assemble and make a little network down there and start trading data around and broadcasting their data back up to the helicopter and so on. And if you study things like volcanoes, this could be a really cool thing, because now you don't have to hike down into the volcano anymore. Anyway, fun stuff. In the Netherlands, apparently they have some people who don't swim very well. And what they did with the sunspots was really creative. They took sunspots, put them in a plastic baggie, and taped them to the back of the swimmer. And so here, as she dives into the water, you can see down the bottom what the accelerometer is seeing. And you can sense as she moves from side to side in the water, you can even tell if you do some analysis where she's taking breaths, if she's tilting more to one side than to the other, and all sorts of interesting things that can help them get better swimmers. That's kind of a fun one. This one is really cool. This we just found on YouTube. This guy named Mike made his bicycle fly with sunspots. And so here's Mike. There's his sunspot. And what he did is he used the Google Earth Flight Simulator and his bicycle to make a system for exercising that is really cool, I think. So you can see here on his bike, he's got all these contraptions. He's got these little drumstick things on the handlebars, and you can sense as the handlebars are turning, you can sense the wheels turning as he pedals, and all this stuff is connected to the different inputs on a single sunspot that's on his bicycle. And that transmits wirelessly to another sunspot that's on his computer, It's the base station sunspot, if you will. And that one translates what it's getting from all those sensors into commands to the Google Earth flight simulator. So he just starts pedaling, and all of a sudden he's moving down the runway, right? And when he gets going fast enough, my complaint is I think he should have to pedal faster to take off. But anyway, be that as it may, you know, still working out the constants that you have to multiply by here. He pulls back on the handlebars, and whoof, he's flying. And here he goes. He's cruising around, and he can go anywhere in the world. And I love this because, you know, if you think about it, what's a great motivation for getting your exercise, then, you know, if you stop pedaling, you're going to crash. I mean, that's awesome. I'd be in much better shape if I had this. Anyway, so that's just out on YouTube. You can check it out. Another fun one is this guy. This one, I think, really is the billion seller, right? We're trying to get something that's going to actually make a difference to Sun that's already got billions of Java licenses out there. This might be it, I think. There's this guy named Bob Beasley who had a dog named Sadie. And I presume he still does have a dog named Sadie. But and we tried to get him to change the name of the dog to Spot, but he refuses. Anyway, he wanted to know what Sadie does while he's off at work. So like any good geek, he built himself a web page with a webcam. Ah, all right. But the dog was never there. So what he did is he put some buttons on the page that would play sound saying, "Come here, Sadie," and she would come. And he realized if he can do that, he can have her do tricks, like sit and roll over. This is awesome. This is really cool. But then he started feeling a little guilty about this. So he also put a reward button on there. And he used his sunspot kit and a bunch of servos and things to build a gadget that's in the back there that actually dispenses a treat for Sadie once she does her tricks. See, I'm telling you, this is the billion seller. This is big, big, big. And the other great thing is that after she gets her treat, she's gone. He still doesn't know what she does. I mean, she's watching TV or something, I guess. So.
Why don't you tie the accelerometers to where the dog is going?
Good thought. Yeah, Bob's a genius and everything, but he didn't think of that one. We've just been having a blast with this because people have done all sorts of wacky things with sunspots and some very serious things with sunspots. And it's just really cool to see where all this can lead. These things are just some of the videos that we found on YouTube. Like there's Mike's flying bike up there. The one right below Mike's flying bike is one of the guys that just like sunspots a lot, so he took them on his vacation with him and took pictures of sunspots in all sorts of cool places. Well, you know, it makes you think about stuff. It makes you, you know, you wonder, what can you do with sunspots? Well, what happens if you take it hiking with you? What can you do with it? I don't know. There's people who built interesting games and little displays on them and robots. And oh, the one with the juicer down there is kind of fun in the lower left kind of area there. He's doing Fourier transform analysis on the vibrations from the accelerometer, and he can tell you if you're actually juicing an orange or doing something else that's vibrating there. And well, now this is serious. This is important. Come on, guys. You want to know if that's really an orange that you're getting for breakfast in your juice? No, actually, the algorithm was designed because he's actually trying to find out what happens with these large sawmills where they have these giant blades and they saw, and apparently they sort of go down to a skeleton crew overnight. And if one of the blades breaks overnight, it's bad news. They lose a lot of sawing time. And I guess for these mills, you know, time spent sawing is money made, and time spent not sawing is money lost. So it's a big deal for them. And they want, through vibration analysis, they want to be able to tell if those blades are about to fail. And apparently that has something to do with oranges and juice. I don't know, lots of fun stuff that people have been doing. And all this you can find on YouTube. These numbers are out of date. But if you go to YouTube and you look for this keyword that you probably can't read from there, but I think I have it on another slide, spots, S-P-A-U-G-H-T-S. Spots, like tot, only spot. It's sort of the Scottish spelling of spots, if you will. We've told our community that if you make videos, if you blog about your stuff, if you Twitter, if you whatever, stick a tag on it, put this word on there, and that's how we find out what each other are doing. And this was kind of an interesting thing because a lot of folks, when they do open source and that sort of thing, they really are trying to pull everyone into their area. Oh, we want people to do videos about sunspots, so let's create a website that does video for sunspots and we'll make it really cool. And you know, YouTube is great for videos. We're not gonna do anything better than that or any of the other places that are out there. And plus, if we make our own place for people to put videos, only the folks who are already, you know, the ones using sunspots are ever gonna see those videos. We want them out there in the world, and so we just picked a keyword to tie everybody together. And that works out really well for us. In fact, that's one of our lessons learned here about how to use the community and how to get them to rally around the technology and do interesting stuff. We just invented a word and then used that word liberally to identify our stuff. There's also another interesting one here that if any of you are involved in open source projects, is a bit of advice that we've learned that I like to pass on, which is early on, well, we do all our support on forums on the website, and early on, when someone would come in with a problem, we jumped all over it, and we wanted to really be responsive and help people fix their problems and all that. But as we've been growing, we've started to change that. Often now, we will wait 24 hours before we post a response to anything. And the reason for that, it's kind of counterintuitive until you start to think about it. What that does is that gives the community a chance to jump in before us. That gives us a chance to develop some other experts. That will get other people known in the community as the people who know this stuff. And that's really great for us, and that's just something I like to pass on. If you're involved in open source stuff, make sure that you leave room for people in your community to get something out of it, some notoriety, some whatever, make room for them to fit in and be like a contributor to it. All right, so all this fun and frivolity. excuse me. There are some significant issues that we're going after with sunspots, like sunspots in the data center, which can help us understand how to make more power-efficient data centers. Data centers use something like 2% of the U.S.'s energy grid, and that's growing. When I learned about this, it sort of blew me away. And sunspots, we're hoping, and related technologies will help us to make this more efficient. We actually did a project that wasn't about energy efficiency, but the first thing that got us into the data center was this thing, sunspots on the black box. The black box was the code name for the modular data center, which was a cool project done at Sun, which started out with the question, what's the biggest computer that we could build and sell to somebody? And one of the first comments was, well, you'd have to fit it into a shipping container, so that's kind of the largest we could go. And so the shipping container became the basis for this project, and we built basically a data center inside a shipping container. And the early version of this thing, we were having lunch with one of the engineers who was working on it, and he started mentioning some of these things about, you know, sunspots would be really great for this project because you've got $1 million worth of computers in this box. And you put it on a truck, and it's turned off, and so none of the systems, nothing's monitoring anything. It's just on a truck, and the truck driver drives off, and there goes your $1 million, you know. Bye. Hope you take good care of it. it'd be nice to know where it is and how it's being treated, right? So we put a bunch of sunspots in here to measure a 3D accelerometer, to measure acceleration, GPS to track it, temperature, humidity, light. We built this that board that I mentioned that lets you put the SD card in for memory so that we could log all this data. We hooked it up to a cell phone so that it could call home and tell us where it is and give us some of this data back. And we had this whole system up and going in 2 weeks. That was cool. That proved to us that we actually were onto something. It was pretty neat. We're doing a lot more. I'll show you in a few minutes a little bit more that we're doing with data centers. But this is just a fun video of, there's apparently a shake table around here in San Diego somewhere that simulates big earthquakes, and you can build houses and stuff on it. And here's a black box, the inside of a black box during one of those experiments where they were trying to see what it would do in an earthquake. And of course, the sunspots are telling you exactly what's shaking around, and they were able to move them around to different places and monitor what was going on. That was pretty cool. So let's take a more in-depth look at some of the technology here, just for a little fun. Sensing is important, and the probably the coolest sensor on the system right now is the accelerometer. We sort of built this just before the Wii came out and sort of made it more commonplace. But the accelerometer is very cool. The way that an accelerometer works, this is a MEMS accelerometer, so micro electromechanical device accelerometer. If you zoomed in really close, it probably doesn't look anything like this. But the principle of what I'm about to say, I believe to be true, and I will propagate it even if it's false. And that is that basically you'll find that there's a bar that's suspended and another bar that's sort of doesn't go completely across, that's got some sort of weight on it, some sort of mass on it. And what happens is that mass on there actually is being pulled down by gravity, right? So it's going to bend that lower bar down a little bit. And what we can do here is, because gravity is pulling that down, if we look at this thing as a capacitor, the capacitance will change depending on how far apart those pieces of metal are. And because gravity is pulling that down, we'll have a little less capacitance than we would otherwise. And if we shake this thing around, that part in the middle is going to kind of stay more still than the rest of it, and that's going to give us different reading for how we're moving, right? So see that? In fact, I can show you, give you an example of how this works in practice. Suppose that I had a sunspot in my hand, say, for instance, this one, and gravity is pulling it down at 32 feet per second squared, and my hand is holding it up. So the result of that is this thing is being bent down right now by gravity because my hand is holding up the other parts but not that thing that's bent down. If I were to throw this, and we can plot this, you know, and see that basically we're getting 1 G's worth of acceleration down. If I were to throw it, then I'm pushing harder on the parts around that thing that bends, so it's going to bend more. So we'll measure some acceleration. And then as soon as I let go of it, now everything, the gravity is acting on both the outside parts and the part that moves freely equally. So it will sense nothing. It's in free fall. It's experiencing 0 G's, even while it's going up. And eventually it starts to come back down again, and I have to be careful because then my head stops it and we get a big spike. And, it's kind of what happens. So let me just show an example of that. Here's my application, and I have some sunspots here. I didn't think too well about this, but let's see. I think that this has on it something called the telemetry main application. And so these sunspots are here, and this one over here just got that program over the air. and it is now running this program called Telemetry Main. And it's being talked to by this base station that's hooked to my laptop here. And let me just go out of this and go to this fine development environment called NetBeans that I'm using here. And we're going to do something called BaldToss. And we're going to run this program. Now, I'm running a program that's going to talk to the base station here. And it is going to record data from this spot here. And you can see just what I described there is going on, where it experiences free fall while it's up in the air. And you can see that by timing that, we're able to tell exactly how long it was in the air. Doing a little bit of math, a little high school physics, and we can see that that went 4.5 feet in the air. Isn't that cool? Isn't that fun? I like that stuff. And so we've been having fun with high school students with that sort of stuff for a while, just because they're inspiring. I don't know. They're going to invent the next cool thing because we're all sort of set in our ways, and they're beyond that. All right, so let me go back to my presentation here. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about blurring the line between hardware and software. I have here Exhibit A, a small robot. This robot is made of a few simple household items. Some servos, like you would find in an airplane, tires that are stuck to those servos, some standard AA batteries in a little box here, and some wires in a sunspot. And that's all there is to this. There's no fancy circuits designed or anything like that. There are wires connected directly to a sunspot. There's these servos with the wheels connected to them, and that's it. So the servos are cool. They have basically three wires coming out of them. Two are for power, the red and black ones, and then the yellow one is for control. You send pulses down that, and it'll cause the servo to turn. That's how you control a servo. Okay. Pretty straightforward stuff. So the sunspot is set up to send those pulses over that yellow wire. And there's two servos here, so there's two yellow wires connected to the sunspot. The red and black ones are connected to the battery pack up here. And we also connect the red and black ones to the sunspot, so you've got a common ground and that sort of stuff. But it's nothing fancy, trust me on this. And all right, so building it isn't too hard. How about actually programming it? Well, for those of you who know Java, this is basically importing some libraries that we provide with the sunspot. And this is the main, essentially, for this program, which is a midlet in this Java ME environment, the cell phone version of Java. And what we do is these few lines of code here. We go and we get the output pins. Okay, so this creates an array of pins that are the output pins that we get off of the eDemo board. And we tell it that there's a servo connected to pin H0 and another servo that we'll call, the first one's left servo, second one is right servo, connected to H1. Okay, and then we tell them to move. That's all the code that's required to make this move. Now, I've done a little bit fancier than that, where I use the radio to communicate from this sunspot I've got in my hand to the robot that I'm about to crash off the podium, because one of the servos is a little bit broken, so it pulls when I start it out. So this will be a challenge. But what this is doing is it's using the accelerometer. Now, you remember how the accelerometer works. It's a 3D accelerometer, so it can sense essentially this way, and this way, that acceleration. And so right now, one of those directions is getting gravity. But as I tilt it, some other dimensions are going to start getting gravity. And by looking at this, I can actually tell which way is down. And that gives me a way to make a cheap and easy gesture controller that when I tilt it, I can send a command over to the robot to go forward. And I can send another command to make it turn. And then I can get nervous and catch it when it falls off. But the idea here is this is a very simple project, right? All that this is some wires and hot glue. There's no circuit, no capacitors, transistors, resistors, or anything. This is a software project. In fact, this is a high-level software project. This is a Java project, right? Cool. Connecting everything. Yeah, we'll see if this demo works. I don't know. See how Roger's stupid spot tricks play today. So one of the other things that these devices have is they have radios. They can talk to each other. And they mesh network. They communicate with each other. And so the way that that works is like this. You put a bunch of them down, and they communicate with each other. And these lines, in this case, would represent ones that are able to communicate with each other because they're at the edge of their radio range, we'll say. And so suppose that A wants to send data to G. So A on the left side wants to get all the way down to G on the right side. Well, what it'll do is it'll broadcast a message, where is G? And other ones will continue to broadcast that and propagate that message through the network. Eventually, G will get that. And each time that that was propagated, each sunspot was adding itself to a list that was being built up so that now G, the first message that it gets, has a complete path of the fastest way to get to G from A. And so now it can take that path and send back along that path something to A saying, this is how you get to me. And then A will use that path to send to G. Pretty straightforward stuff. Self-healing is fun too, that these devices, this method works fine. You can keep that path. But suppose that in the middle you try to transmit along that path and you find out that B, for some mysterious reason, has disappeared. No problem. You just go through the same process again. You say, well, I've got data for G. My old path isn't working, so let's go and find a new path. And you find it, and then you can just send the message the new way. And these things also, these paths also, you can set them to time out so that if a new device does come in that would make your path more efficient, well, then eventually you'll start asking, and you will use the new, more efficient path. So let's take a look at that in action. Whoops. All right, so I have here in this this tool that we have called Solarium, I have 5 spots up here on the podium. And let me just put them up here. What it's doing right now, which takes a long time, unfortunately, is it's going through and asking each one, and it's trying to do this in a way that lets other traffic get through. That's why it takes a long time. It's by design. It's going through and asking each one about the signal strength to each other device. And because these are all fairly close, I've just got them sort of spread out around here. You can see they all can pretty much talk to each other. But I've got a little radio view here that tells me who can talk to whom. And in fact, if I hover over these connections, I can see that, in fact, they're all 100% connections. And so that's a kind of cool tool that if you think about managing a network of devices like this, it's going to be different than managing a standard wired network. This idea of things like asymmetric communications, I can talk to you, but you can't talk back to me. Oh God, that sort of screws up a lot of things that we assume to be true in networking. And that happens a lot in radio because radio is weird. It used to be that we would do demos before we had things sort of figured out. We would do demos and they would work great until a bunch of people came into the room. And then it turns out that us ugly bags of mostly water completely change radio propagation. And so your demo used to work. Bunch of people come in to see it, and it just doesn't work anymore, you know? And it's just pretty much game over. So what you gonna do? Well, understanding this space is really interesting and complex, and a lot of fun to study. Okay, so let's take a look at just a couple more things here. I'll just finish up with one more thing that I'll show you about collecting the data. We've got other kinds of sensors that we've built, like this thing called the EtherWatt that's for power monitoring. Basically, it's a lump in a cable, and you can put this cable on whatever you want to measure the power for, and it works. And that and a bunch of sunspots are being used in this thing called sensor.network.com, which is a website that we're playing around with. Here it is live. And on this website, we've got a bunch of installations that I can look at. And let's go to SpotNet. This happens to be a network of, oh, let me log in again. We'll log in as demo. What do you say? This is set up to, so this is going to look at a network that's in my building where my office is. And these sunspots are, here we are monitoring them and seeing these are the ones that are used sort of as infrastructure for our experiments in labs. Here's one of these power strips, the power cords that I was talking about. But all these things, we can take a look at them on a map and sort of see where they are. Here they are spread around the building. And you've got ones like, here's one that's kind of near a doorway. So if we take a look at it and look at, say, light readings, we'll see that it shows you that it gets light during the day and dark at night. This stuff is awesome, I'm telling you. But anyway, we can go through and we can monitor our network. We can manage our network of these little devices, and it gets fairly complex. And there's a lot of things that you can do. But we use them for all sorts of things. Like here's one that's in actually a sort of demo data center that we have at this thing called the Executive Briefing Center. And for example, I can go here and I can pull up. This is a live video feed of the data center that's very overexposed right now. But behind those windows, there is this data center. And on the left side is a machine with a bunch of sunspots in it. And we have integrated in here information from some of the servers in that rack and information from the sunspots about the environment that the servers are in. So we're mixing together the virtual world that you can get at from a console with the real world of temperatures and vibrations and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, fun stuff. So, Sunspot Project. That's a quick overview of what it's about. Our website is at sunspotworld.com. All the open source is at spots.dev.java.net. This is one of many open source projects that we do in Sun Labs. There's a lot of cool stuff out there. I just talked about this one project today. There's lots of cool stuff. So go check out research.sun.com, and you can find other stuff. And with that, I'll just say thank you very much.
All very cool, and thank you very much. What's the weirdest thing somebody has done?
The weirdest thing. I don't know. I think there are some things that I've heard about people doing that aren't appropriate to discuss here. That might be pretty cool, I don't know. that might qualify as weird, I don't know. Also, there are certain things that people always try to do with sunspots. First thing people want to do, or one of the very first things that people want to do, is they want to know where a sunspot is. So a lot of people immediately jump to, well, I could know that, you know, this is here, and now it's here, and here, and here. And they want to triangulate using radio signal strength, and like I said, people and things in the room, they call this, they have all these things that change the way that the radio space works. And you can't, with at least with the radios that we have and the design that we have on this particular hardware, you really can't do that. We tried to make a theremin early on with two sunspots, where we made a thing and tried to tell how far apart they were and so on. And it just, you know, instead of going up as you got closer, it would go do 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 do. You know, it was kind of overall going up, but it would go up and down on the way there. And while I was talking about that, I did think of one that was more weird that is a great one. We taught a sunspot Morse code. I'm a ham radio operator. I admit it. I'm a geek. But not many people know Morse code these days, so we created a translator. And with this particular set of things, you can send Morse code with one sunspot. It sends wirelessly over to this other device that has a couple of servos and these flags, and it translates it to semaphore. It's awesome. Anything else?